Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you. I love getting to do that. And wherever you are, if you are in the pickup line at school, because we're starting back to be that time, if you're at work, if you're at home, if you're driving down the road, or if you happen to be on the way to a baseball practice or another sporting event, we have got the show for you today. We are going to talk about being a baseball family. Now, whether it's baseball or whatever sport it is, we have a lot of families in this country today who are really engaged in sports with their kids. And today we're going to be talking to Billy Jouse. She is an accomplished author, a speaker, a podcast host, and she is dedicated to inspiring women to achieve God's best in their faith, family, and friendships. And we're going to be talking about her book today, Baseball Families and the Baseball Family, 9 Core Qualities for Developing Healthy Relationships. I think we could all benefit from that kind of advice. Now, she has been married for over 30 years to Dave Jouse, who is a Major League Baseball coach. I know some of you guys are probably thinking, oh, yes. And some of you girl baseball fans, too, are thinking, oh, yes. Okay, I know this. And Billy has navigated life in 15 U.S. cities, as well as Venezuela and the Dominican Republic. And together, their family spends the baseball season on the road and the off season in Southwest Florida. So she is going to be talking to us about how we can build strong relationships and adapt to diverse cultures. Billy, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, I feel like we have to get something settled right away. I've shared with you, I live in Houston. I am a diehard Astros fan. Is that going to be problematic in any way going forward? Because I just feel like we need to get that out in the open.
Never. Because in this crazy baseball life, we usually only have year-to-year contracts. So you never burn bridges anywhere. You may end up at some point in your career.
Okay, good.
I'm a fan of baseball.
If you ever come to Houston, I'll take you out for the best Tex-Mex you ever had in your life. So I can promise you that.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, Billy, you have been just so many places and so many contexts and so many cultures. I would love for you just to share a little bit about your life and how you ended up being a baseball wife and in a baseball family.
Yeah, I grew up liking baseball. I had grown up on a farm in eastern North Carolina. My dad got sick, started leasing out the farm, so we weren't working on it as much on weekends anymore. And I didn't know what to do with myself. And some of my friends at my school were like, I was in middle school, and they're like, why don't you come to the ballpark on Saturday and watch us play? And I'm like, okay. And that started my love of baseball. That led into, in college years, meeting my husband. He was already working in the baseball world, and I met him, and we ended up getting married and chasing this baseball life for all these years and having 3 boys and raising them on the road. We have homeschooled. I homeschooled for 7 years. We've lived in, like you said earlier, all those different places, doing all the different cultures and different aspects of life, but also baseball. And I prayed for years that my boys would not grow up and want jobs in baseball, because I knew how difficult it was on the wives. And I'm like, Lord, no, please don't do that. And now all 3 of them work in baseball, and 2 of them are getting married. And I'm just so blessed that they have women in their lives that are supportive of what they're doing, understanding of the crazy lifestyle, and very excited about all that's to come for them.
Well, what has been the most rewarding thing about having a life in baseball? Now, I told you, I am a baseball fan. I love baseball. My son plays baseball. Like, we are diehard Astros fans. I love the game. There's just so many inspiring things.
Yeah.
And Billy, my husband thinks that there is no parenting problem that cannot be solved without a sports analogy. And usually has to do with baseball. It's so inspiring. There's lots of great things and great opportunities that you've had. What do you think is the most rewarding thing that you've experienced about being a baseball family?
You know what? It is the baseball family. It's the people you meet, the relationships that you make, be that with players and wives, coaches and wives, to the lady that I buy my water bottle from every night at a ballpark, or the, you know, back in the day, I'd say the ticket taker. They don't take your ticket anymore. You scan it at most ballparks. But the person that you see at that gate every night that you get to have a relational exchange with, you may not know a ton about them in the beginning, but you move forward in that. And we've just had such great experiences when we slow down and really love on other people where they are. And, you know, that's something for me that when people talk about, what's your favorite team? What's your favorite team you've ever been with? What is the best experience you've ever had? And it honestly goes back to those experiences with my baseball family. Like, that has been so transformational and encouraging and loving and kind. Now, not all of my experiences have been beautiful. I have had sandpaper people, you know, those people that grind on your ever living last nerve, you know, those people. I've had those too. But, you know, God is really, for David and myself, we feel that God has called us to baseball, and that's our mission field, pun intended. You know, it is our mission field, and that is where God has called us to love the people he puts in front of us, wherever he places us. And that means that we're loving on a lot of people that don't look like us, believe like us, walk like us, talk like us, and God forbid, don't even vote like us. But we're put in front of them to show them the love of Christ. And so for me, that has been the most rewarding experience.
I love that for so many reasons. Sandpaper people, yes, absolutely. But we have to remember, we're being refined, right? We're being reshaped. And those people can be allowed in our life for a reason and to really develop our character. But I love the concept of wherever you are, looking at the people who are around you, because there are a lot of families who think, well, you know, we're not a pastor family, a missionary family, you know, we're not in vocational ministry, but every family is called to ministry and minister to those people where they are. And Billy, I know you and I see eye to eye on this in a world that where we just see a lot of conflict and a lot of just unrest, you know, and a lot of vitriol towards each other, just a lot of ugly talking, especially online. If there's somebody who, like you said, oh my goodness, they vote differently than you, or those kinds of things, how do we still look at that as our mission field? And so I want to really dive into that. But before I do, let me ask you, you've said some great things about baseball and about your mission field. What's the most challenging thing? What's been the hardest thing?
You know, the hardest thing of the baseball life is what I prayed to the Lord he wouldn't put my kids in baseball for. And that's the difficulty on the wives. And, you know, we go into this supporting our husbands, but there's a lot more support than just being a cheerleader in the stands. Our guys leave in February. Wherever we make home in the off season, which is only 3 months long, they leave in February and they come home in October, November. We pray they come home in November. That means they went to the World Series. But sometimes they come home, you know, in early October. But, you know, that's the most difficult thing, is navigating this life where they are working 12, 14-hour days, 8 months a year, and navigating life with kids and school and finances and housing and travel and all the things. And usually when people are like, what's the most challenging, a lot of people will say, yeah, but those players make a lot of money. And my thing of it is, it doesn't matter how much money you make, there's still difficulty in life when it comes to the things that you have to do as a baseball wife. And the things we have to do is really be the cheerleaders of our family. We have to be the foundation for our family. You know, when my kids were little, I couldn't say, hey, don't do that. If you do, I'm going to tell Dad. And when he gets home, because Dad might not be home for 10 days to 6 weeks, you know? So those are the things as a mom that you have. And I know there are a lot of, I would not have gotten through baseball if it weren't for a college roommate who married a guy in the Navy. And her life was so similar to mine that we would sit on the phone some nights until the wee hours of the morning, knowing we were going to regret it the next day with little kids getting up. But we could lament to each other. We could complain, but we took each other back to a life-giving place, a life-giving word, a life-giving prayer, a life-giving experience that you'll get through this. Look what I did. You can get through this. Or look where we were 6 months ago, and now look where we are. It really, having that person in my life helped, but it didn't make it less challenging. But that, to me, the biggest challenge is just the schedule and the demand on my husband over the years. And I'm at the point now, we're empty nesters, and I keep thinking one day maybe he'll retire, but it's like that R word, retire, is not in his vocabulary. And I think he's doing more now than we did before, because God keeps opening up these crazy opportunities that are like, okay, Lord, yeah, let's go to South Korea with MLB and do an event called Home Run Derby X. Yeah, Lord, let's go to Nashville, Tennessee and do another Home Run Derby X. Or let's go to the All-Star Game. And my husband threw in the Home Run Derby to Pete Alonso at the All-Star Game. And it's like the Lord just keeps opening these opportunities, and we don't want to be remiss to see where God is putting us and who he's putting in the path of where we are, so that we can love them.
You know, there's so many things I'm thinking, but when we look at families facing issues today and facing culture today, we all have similar pressures as far as, are we going to live out our faith wherever we are? Yeah. And there's unique challenges in that. And you said earlier, you know, that the money doesn't matter. And I think there's some things that money may make easier, you know, as far as resources to have help or those kinds of things. But I think, Billy, in some ways, money makes it really harder when you talk about, you know, having your character, because I think there are a lot of temptations and pressures that can come with success. And I think all along the way, you know, those families who maybe they still have little leaguers and they're having dreams of, you know, their kids making it to the MLB. And then all the way up to facing those successes in the MLB and seeing all of the temptations and the different ways where you could just think, oh, I've made it. I don't need God. I don't need my faith. Or how am I going to live out my faith in a way that is so public? Because we see the criticism of other athletes that even recently, you know, in the news have been really criticized for that. How do you hold on to your faith in the midst of all of that, in the midst of the challenges of being a single mom from February to October, but also having, you know, like you said, those tremendous opportunities and success and exposure and those kinds of things? How do you hold on to what really matters?
I feel like the foundation of knowing who God is and who he's created us to be takes a lot of that pressure off. Now, we've seen some very strong Christian men and women be very strong in their faith all the way through the minor leagues, up to the first year or two in the big leagues, and then face a big contract. And all of a sudden, it becomes more important than God. And I talk a lot within the baseball realm, and I've actually just started talking about it publicly, but I talk to the baseball players and their wives about fame, fortune, and celebrity. Fame and fortune is not what takes your faith away from you. When you have fame, you have a platform that you're able to present Jesus in a way that nobody else can. Now, that could be a mom on a little league team that becomes team mom. That's what your fame is. You're known to be the team mom. You're known to be the woman that has the answers to all the questions. And to do that in a loving, kind way to everyone, even the sandpaper people, it's what we're called to do. The fortune, if God is going to give us extra resources to be responsible in those resources and building the kingdom and supporting the kingdom and financing the kingdom growth, that is where we find our footing. But when celebrity hits, celebrity is when you become bigger than God. Be that
well,
the
hold
mom.
That thought, Billy. I know this is such a cliffhanger, but we are up against a break. So when we come back, we're going to find out what happens when celebrity hits. I cannot wait to hear this answer. I know you can't either. Back with so much more from Billy Giles on Being a Baseball Family on the other side of this break. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Chains for your freedom, 'cause you were the one that I needed. Oh, but God resurrected my heart from the ruins, and my rescue came through like the morning. And now this is my sure testimony.
Welcome back, friends. We are having such a great conversation with Billy Giles, author of Baseball Families, 9 Core Qualities for Developing Healthy Relationships. That song is Oh But God by Davey Flowers. And those are my 2 favorite words in the history of ever to put together. But God. But God has saved us and given us a hope and a meaning in a world that it just seems like is increasingly off kilter. And before the break, we left you on quite a cliffhanger as we were talking with Billy about the trappings that can come with success in athletics. She was talking about fame, fortune, and celebrity, and we were right on celebrity. Billy, I'm going to give it back to you.
Yeah. So we talked about fame being any point or any place where people know us for something, where there's some recognition for something. Fortune is any resources that God gives us that we're able to feed back into the kingdom. But the problem comes into when the celebrity hits and we become bigger than God. What we do is more important than taking time to spend with the Lord or accept his guidance. And we become the God. No matter if that's in professional sports or in your workplace or as a mom, you know, something successful or like I said, being the team mom or being, you know, the leader of something, that we find ourselves in a place that we are bigger than what God is calling us to do, to be with him, knowing who he is and who he's created us to be and how we can move forward in that. So celebrity hits, and that's when we find ourselves far away from what we believe God has called us to, and we take charge of it all.
I think that is really just instructive, because I see so many families who have such big dreams of their kids playing college ball or making it to the big leagues, but that's not making it. You know, I mean, yes, those are goals. Those are things that absolutely can be admirable and worthy and tremendous. And I know, I think about even some boys from our community that we're now watching. It was such a strange experience to walk through a restaurant and look up and see, oh, there's a boy that I've known since he was five, pitching right there on ESPN, which is really exciting to see. But it is about, if you flip your narrative, if you flip your paradigm and redefine what success means, I think that's really important to equip our kids for success, should they, for character success and success in their faith, should they meet that professional success. So Billy, in light of all of that, looking at your experience, your family's journey, the perspective that you have, what do you say to the parents who feel like, okay, we're in the trenches, our whole life is at the ballpark, we're in the car, maybe we have our priorities straight, maybe we don't, you know, maybe we have gotten a little too much and we've lost sight of what's of important, or maybe we don't. What encouragement do you give to them right now so that they can feel assured that they are on the right path and making the right choices and setting their kids up for success?
You know, it's so hard when you're wanting your kid to be as successful as they can be and you want them to reach the pinnacle of what they can reach. When our expectations, though, become unrealistic is where things fall apart. When we're pushing rather than allowing God to pull us into places that he wants us to be. And that is also with the giftings of your kid. It's like if your kid is athletically gifted, and if that be a cheerleading squad, a dance squad, volleyball, soccer, you know, we've just been able to see the Olympics and all the athletes that are succeeding in that. It's really allowing your expectation to be on where God is pulling you. Where is God taking you into these spaces rather than pushing? You know, teaching our kids to love one another as Christ loved us so that others will see that we are his disciples. So when we base every decision we make on God's guidance and where he's taking us, it allows us to see a bigger picture. When we allow our ego and our pride to overwhelm us that my kid's better than what this coach says he is, my kid is better than the kid that's playing in front of him, I'm going to switch teams, I'm going to jump here, I'm going to jump there, that is almost that celebrity mentality that I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. When we think we're better than where we are or what we're doing, that can lead us to a place we shouldn't be. And as parents, it is our responsibility to teach our kids this pause, these moments of leaning into where God is in each situation. You know, raising my kids with Major League Baseball teams, with Major League players, and spotlight on dad and people knowing us when we went out to dinner was very difficult to not let their pride get ahead of them. But as parents, we were really, really responsible in being able to say to them, watch us, without words, just watch us. We're going to love the people that God puts on in front of us. If they're the best player on the team or the janitor that's cleaning the toilet in the concourse, like, we want to be as excited to see each of those people the same. We want them to know that we see them and we love them and we know them, not because of what they do, but who God's created them to be. And this isn't just because they were believers. There were a lot of non-believers that we loved them where they were, but we didn't leave them there. We wanted to show them the love of Christ through our actions, through our words. And it wasn't always preaching. It wasn't always sharing. It was developing a relationship with these people at the first contact that they knew that we were loving on them, that we were respecting them. We were including them in, you know, our daily activities. If that was just smile at them and open a door or whatever that may be, that we were able to show them that we were loving them. And then as those relationships grew, we were able to bring Jesus into words. We wanted to have Jesus in actions and then bring Jesus into words. And if that be inviting a wife to a Bible study for me, you know, or to sit in the stands and talk about my faith and what God's done in my life, that doesn't happen the first time I meet that wife. It happens as we've sat in the stands for a little while and I've loved on her where she is. And then I take her to a place of introducing her to Jesus or walking alongside of her in her faith, whatever that may be. So to show our kids this without saying, you need to learn this, you need to do this, it's really by watching us. And that's hard to do sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. But in times that I got frustrated or something wasn't godly enough in my mind that I had done in front of my children, I would ask for forgiveness. I would move on. Now, let me just tell you, honey, I am not the perfect mom. I have messed up a lot. But
me neither.
I have a perfect, yeah, exactly. And I have a perfect God that I can run back to every time and say, Lord, forgive me. Help me guide my children and show my children where they need to be. Let me be the example. Let me be the Jesus in skin that they see, loving on others so that even my children know that I'm a disciple of Christ.
It's so important to model that because they do what they see, not what we say. You know, they are really modeling what we're doing. And I think it's so important to model that, to love other people, whether that's the person who's opening the door, who's the ticket taker. Right. I'll go with your old school because I'm old school like that too. Or, you know, whether it's somebody that is a parent on the team or another family on your team, wherever that is. And you do bring some interesting points, Billy, about contrasting that, because we've got, yes, we want to love people where they are. We want to meet their needs. We want to minister to them. But also it's important for us to be able to navigate those relationships that are kind of changing and that are happening in the context of, you know, environments that are outside the church or outside a curated body of believers. You know, it's not like this is a Sunday school class or something like that. It's really important for us to be able to differentiate voices for our kids they can trust and that are going to influence their worldview. And you said in your book, you talk about how social media has really confused people into believing online acquaintances or social contacts or real friends or family or people that we can trust. And I think kids have a hard time, you know, trying to differentiate that between what is ministry, what is loving on people, and what adults are going to speak into their life to give them advice that is trustworthy. So how do you discern? How do you teach discernment to the kids and balance that? Yes, we want to love all people, but not all people are going to give us advice that is going to be instructive for the way that we want to live our values and faith. How do you do that?
Absolutely. One of the things I talk about in the book that really helps, and people have been coming to me saying that this has given them such freedom in understanding these different connections, are the four relationships that I talk about in the book. Every day we have relational exchanges with people that we come in contact with. And in those exchanges, there are four different levels of connections. That is starting with an accidental acquaintance, that person that you just run into once or twice. You really don't know their names very well. You don't remember their name, whatever that is. It's just an accidental acquaintance. God just put them in front of you for a moment. And then we move into our social circle. And this is where social media comes in. Our social circle can be, what is it on Facebook? It's 5,000 friends. On Instagram, it looks like it's limitless. And on TikTok, it's infinity. You know, you have all these people that you can come in contact with in an accidental acquaintance if you're watching a reel or you're watching something pass by. But if you continue to watch their reels or follow them, that becomes your social circle. Your accidental acquaintance and your social circle do not have depth to them. You are not responsible to them. They are not responsible to you. And the information that they're giving does not mean that it's trustworthy or respectful or it's godly by any means. You know, there's so many social circles that you may think, oh, I follow that person. I like their funny videos. But then they get a little off the edge and not so sure about that. But when we have our next level of a relationship, so we go accidental acquaintance, social circle, kindred spirit. It's that person that you're like, hey, I like you. I want to know more about you. I want to get to know you. That's really hard to do on social media. Really hard. Because those connections are really topical within social media, the majority of those connections stay in our social circle. And I think teaching our children that those levels, these four levels of relationships, gives them some freedom and understanding. Hey, I don't have to listen to that person. They may not listen to me. But that kindred spirit is that person that you pull in closer, usually someone you're in a closer proximity with, a person that you're actually having a physical contact with, in a face-to-face contact with, where you can sit down and have a conversation, hang out. For my kids, I talked about, you know, baseball teams were their social circle, but there was always one or two kids on the team that they're like, hey, I like you. I want to hang out more. You want to come over to my house, or do you want to come to my hotel room when we're hanging out and play video games or whatever? Those are the kindred spirits. And then the last of the four relationships is your forever family. Those are those one or two people that are going to go to war for you, even if you don't know you're in a war. If that be an adult or a kid, those are the people you can trust the most. Those are the people that you want to be with the most. Those are the people that are your sidekicks, the people that you can call and they'll drop everything to come over and help you. And I think in understanding those four relationships as an adult has given me such freedom to be able to look at people in my life and categorize them, and some grow, some don't. Some are topical relationships, some aren't. But in teaching that to our children, I believe that gives them such freedom in truly recognizing those online social media contacts and which ones are valuable and which ones aren't.
I think that is really helpful because we have kids who are growing up in influencer culture, and we see our kids deeply influenced by people they really don't even know, that are they're just being influenced by this, you know, what they have as a front and saying, oh, this is the image that I've crafted. It's called image crafting that I want you to see, that I want you to recognize and understand. And the thing that concerns me, Billy, is that they get this vicarious credibility. That's what I call it, because it's, if, oh, everyone in my circle is following them, then you must be worth following.
Yeah.
That's how we're, you know, judging whether we should listen to this voice. Is are other people in my circle listening to this voice? And I think that can be such a hard thing to balance when you are in a sports culture like this, where you're frequently changing teams or going to different leagues or, you know, engaging with different groups of people. And we need to make sure that we are teaching our kids how to honestly evaluate character traits. And that's what gives credibility, is character over time and demonstrating that. And I think that is just increasingly hard to do. Well, Billy, I can't believe it, but we're coming up on another break. And when we come back, I want to talk about these nine core qualities that you talk about: selflessness, inclusion, support, peacemaking, encouragement, compassion, respect, trustworthiness, and generosity. And you talk about those things, how to use those to strengthen each of the four relationship types that you've just outlined for us, and learn to cultivate meaningful connections, even when they're presented to us. They're not ones that we chose. They're ones that God allowed in our lives. So much more with Billy Jouse, author of Baseball Family, Nine Core Qualities for Developing Healthy Relationships. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. You won't want to miss it.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Healing to
Welcome back, friends, and we are talking about things that are for the good. That song is by Riley Clemons, and you know what? You can work for the good, whether you're in sports or school or whatever ministry, whatever community God has placed you in, you can work for the good of those people around you. And that's what we're talking about today. As the wife of a Major League Baseball coach and mom of three boys who also played and work in baseball at the highest levels, Billy Jowse has learned that life on the field often mirrors life off the field, and she has had to navigate life all over the world in many cultures while her husband Dave managed teams of players on the field. And together, they've had to connect quickly and deeply with people from diverse backgrounds. And with each baseball season, the faces change, just like the seasons of life. Billy, welcome back. We're so glad to have you. And, you know, your book is called 9 Core Qualities for Developing Healthy Relationships, and we've talked a little bit about the importance of helping our kids understand what are those healthy relationships in this circle, the community that they have been put in. Give us a little overview of these 9 core qualities and how they have helped you raise your boys and develop healthy relationships.
Yeah, the one that I started off with the 9 core qualities, and I want to back up that I never write a book until I've lived it through my life. And this book was lived through many years of life. And these, you know, these were very important to me to teach my kids over the years. I didn't realize it sometimes when I was in the midst of it, but these were things that were very important. And the first one is selflessness. And the way that I define selflessness is seeing others' needs as more important than our wants, not our needs, but our wants. So if we're seeing others' needs as more important as our wants, we're taking time to see the people that God puts in front of us. We're taking the time to be able to interact with people that God puts in front of us. For my kids, that was really important to me. Like I said in an earlier segment of this, I wanted my kids to treat the person that was cleaning the toilets in the concourse the same way they treated the most famous player on the team. I wanted them to see that person, to love that person, to honor that person, to respect that person. And that started with selflessness. And then the next of the 9 core qualities is inclusion. And our family, even before we really knew that we were doing it, my husband and I were including players that didn't come from this country. We were helping them do things that they didn't understand how to do. Baseball's not always been the best place that teaches people, hey, come to our country from your country, and we'll help you through the navigation of hotels and money and life and transportation. They didn't always help. And my husband and I really took a place in that to be able to include them, to teach them, to guide them, to love them through that transition. And it was really funny when we went to their country. We lived in their country like it was not Americans living in Venezuela or the Dominican Republic. We wanted to be included in their culture, in their, excuse me, in their traditions, in their lives. And that's part of being selfless too, is going in and seeing them as important and not what we want. Yeah, when I was in Venezuela, I wanted a McDonald's hamburger. They didn't have McDonald's, you know? So, but I didn't need it. So it was really stepping into a place of loving their culture, you know, as it was where we were. And in return, the support that they gave us, in those situations. And then when they came back to our country, knowing how much we respect their culture and their country and their people, that relationship grew stronger with them. So going through the nine core qualities, they're each individual qualities, but they're built on one another, and they sort of, it's like running in a stream of water. There's all these, this water running in the same direction, but in different sections around different rocks or over different rocks. It's, you know, it's nine players on a field, and how do they interact with each other, and how do these nine core qualities help them grow, help them continue to love others. So for our kids, it was really teaching them, again, by example. And I will tell you, my kids have not done it perfectly. You know, they haven't. There are things that they've stumbled on. But loving my own children through their struggles and their questions and their doubt, and being able to use these core qualities in their lives just as much as we have people that we didn't know really well, has created this incredible bond with our three boys and us. And so being intentional, and I think that's something that within writing this book, it was like, wow, Lord, look how us focusing on you first and foremost led us to living an intentional life, not perfectly, but intentionally in what we were doing for the kingdom, which is loving others so that they know we're your disciples.
So how have you seen that bear fruit? You know, we've talked about these nine core qualities. They are character traits. These are character traits that you want to emulate and that you also are seeking. Like, those are the character traits you're seeking to influence your kids, those things that they would value, that they would esteem, that they would lift high. How have you seen this pay off in your baseball life? How have those relationships borne fruit of this?
Yeah, you know, the thing that makes me the most joyous is when I see a baseball wife that I had with one team, they've been traded to a different team, and I'm able to say, hey, there's another girl on the team that was with us with a different team. You guys don't know each other, but I would love for you to get to know each other. And then to watch that relationship and the fruit of that relationship grow is so rewarding, because they're there for one another. They're loving on one another. They're encouraging one another. They're compassionate in ways that sometimes doesn't always, you're not always seen in a competitive spirit of people, that you show compassion for others. You know, compassion is showing sympathy towards another's distress while having a desire to alleviate their pain. And that's not always easy to do in a competitive spirit, because if you're competing for someone's spot and they get hurt and your husband gets a starting role because that starting pitcher got hurt, that's really hard not to just keep driving forward. We're the starters now. We can do this. But to look at it and say, oh, my goodness, I really want to help you. What can I do to help you through this? What can I do to help you while you're rehabbing? What can I help you as a family? How can I come alongside you? And in a competitive spirit, we don't always want to do that. And so it's beautiful to see. We had two catchers one time. There was a catcher. He was a veteran catcher. He was awesome. He was nearing the end of his career. And all of a sudden, this young rookie phenom comes up through the minor leagues. He gets to the big leagues, and within a week, he's taken the starter's job. And a lot of times in those situations, you see wives go at each other. They, you know, they're angry, they're bitter, they don't want this to happen. But I saw that wife in such a beautiful way turn to the rookie wife and say, hey, let's link arms. Let's walk through this together. Let me show you where I've been and how you can navigate this life in a better way. That's another quality of being respectful, not only compassionate, but respectful. And that earns the trust of one another, where you know that that person is out for the best of what you can do. They're dependable. They're reliable. They're honest. And we can do that at all four of those relationships I talked about earlier. We can show compassion and trustworthiness just in different ways. As our relationships grow, that looks different. But it doesn't mean that you don't want to show that to people that you may only be in contact with one time. You want to be able to love them where they are with a generous love, that love that just shows Jesus in everything that you do. And in that, our children see that. And, you know, I think about these qualities raising my kids, and I've had people say, oh, is it so good to see your kids living out those qualities? Well, not always, because my oldest son one time took a job cleaning up outside the ballpark after games, and it would be late at night sometimes, and he was 16, 17 years old, and I thought, that's really good. He's earning a little bit of money, until we're walking down the street one day, and this homeless guy that looked pretty rough and tumbled and not in good shape, and he comes up and calls my son by name and hugs him. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Why are you talking to this homeless person? And he's like, Ma, didn't you teach us this? Isn't this what you told us to do, to love the least of these? And I said, oh, yeah, about that. You know, it's not so easy when you see your child live it out, but it's so beautiful. And it's so amazing to see them loving others exactly where they are.
Well, you know, it's so interesting to hear you talking about even going back to the pitchers' wives who are going at, or the pitchers' wives who are going at each other. You know, I have been at many a T-ball game, a little league game, where parents are going at each other, and these children are 5 years old, you know, and I think if you don't get it now, you're not going to get it then. It's amazing to see how some of those problems are the same. So as we end our time together, Billy, I want to go back to that family who's in the car, maybe even in the car right now, driving to a baseball tournament. They are in this life. They are all in. They are enjoying it. And maybe they've thought, you know, I really haven't thought about this as what character traits can we intentionally cultivate in our kids, and how can we intentionally see this as a mission field? And they're thinking, how could we do this? Maybe we could be more intentional. Where would you advise them to start?
Just start one-on-one with your kid. Just pause. Stop the rush. You know, I heard a sermon recently that said Jesus was the least rushed human that ever walked earth. He didn't rush things. He didn't push things. And I think in our society, we are on a hamster wheel of go, go, go so much. We have so much information coming at us. We have so many different things that we can do. We have our calendars are full. It's always fast forward. But if you're in your car with your kid, turn the radio down, put the phones down, actually listen, talk, ask questions. Don't live out of the fear of what might be said or not said. But just to be in the presence of your kid and them in the presence of you. And now there were arguments when my kids were growing up that they had to put a book down, or they had to stop listening to music, or they had to, but it was like, hey, let's just be for a minute. Tell me about what you're looking forward to. Tell me what you didn't like about the past tournament. What did you like most? Who was somebody you connected with? Who was somebody you didn't? What can you do that's different? And also as a parent, share those things about yourself. Wow, Miss Smith was really tough to get along with, but I really felt like I needed to sit and listen to her. So I listened for 2 hours, didn't get a word in edgewise, but I listened. And I hope that she knows that I gave her the time that was respectful of her. To not be so cover up about what we're struggling with, to be honest with our kids, yeah, I struggle with that too. Yeah, that's my sandpaper person is this person, but I'm going to love them more, because that's where God's called me to be. And to really take that intentional time with our kids, because I think we can just get in such a rush, in such a hurry, that we need to slow down and pause. Just pause. See what happens. And so many beautiful memories can be made in that pause.
You know, Billy, it is not lost on me that as I'm asking you advice for families, you are, you know, living in the MLB, you are in that world, you see and know exactly what it takes to be successful, to get there. But, you know, we've just spent an hour together and we haven't once talked about private pitching lessons or, you know, like the best baseball equipment, which those things are important. They have their time and place, but it's been very refreshing to speak with you and to hear your perspective on healthy relationships and just loving people where they are, loving those people who come into your life, especially people who may think differently than you, have different values than you. How can we really live out the values of our faith and those 9 core qualities that you have? Just to give our listeners again, that's selflessness, inclusion, support, peacemaking, encouragement, compassion, respect, trustworthiness, and generosity. You, as a reader, will discover how to strengthen each of those 4 relationship types that Billy talked about, whether it's your accidental acquaintance, your social circle, your kindred spirit, or your forever family, which is just the absolute best. The book is called Baseball Family, 9 Core Qualities for Developing Healthy Relationships. And listen, friend, whether you're going to a baseball game or a theater production or whatever it is that your kids are doing, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And we'll see you right here next time, prescribing more hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.